Hello, this is Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, and thank you for listening. You're listening to the program Is Abled, the radio show about possibilities. It's a wonderful day out right now with actually a little sunshine. And my road trip to my backyard today was very enjoyable. When we look at what a person with disabilities can do, we try and look at the positives and judge them on those terms rather than by what they cannot do. And this is our second series of episodes. Our first was on service dogs. But we're trying to make this very timely. And for this series of episodes, I will be exploring how online learning, forced upon us by COVID-19, is affecting social learning, especially for students with disabilities, students that are non-English speaking, and the marginalized students who fall into lower socioeconomic groups. The big push now is for equality. And I believe this is the right way to go is education. I also believe that one of the most important components to creating equality in our society is to provide a strong, equitable education for all. That doesn't mean everybody's going to be a rocket scientist, but it does mean that we provide programs for all students. So when they get out of school, they'll be able to function, they'll be able to get a job, they'll be able to support themselves. So the question I'll be addressing is how to create educational equality through this COVID-19. I will be discussing the pros and cons of online education. This is not a black and white issue. In fact, it is a very gray issue. It is also not a right or wrong solution. You know, we talk about hybrid models of education. Before that, I thought the only hybrid model was a Prius. But now we're talking about education being a hybrid model where kids come to school for smaller groups for maybe 1 or 2 days a week. And for the rest of the week, they're taught at home. I taught for 50 years, and I can't imagine right now a time that would be tougher to teach for students, for parents that are at home, and for administrators and teachers who are concerned about being in the educational environment and possibly being exposed to COVID. So it's important for you to know also that I'm not an expert, and my opinion is just that, my opinion. People who state they are experts on any topic are generally telling you more what they don't know about the topic than what they do know. So I'm going to combine some lectures as an old professor that I used to be, well, I'm still old, I didn't get any younger, as well as doing quite a few interviews with persons knowledgeable on the issue of online teaching, online education. I'll be interviewing teachers in general ed classes, special education classes, social workers who work with families in their homes, principals, college professors who work with student teachers. How do you prepare a student teacher working with kids online when next year they may be working in that class with students in a large classroom, 26 students. Generally, 26 students is about the average number of students in a classroom. And I used to supervise student teachers. And one of the things that was so important, one of my students asked me, what is the most important thing I can do to manage, behavior in my classroom? And my answer was always grow another set of eyes in the back of your head, because it's really difficult to watch kids. And a lot of times, just like in football, you don't catch the guy who makes the first foul. You catch the guy that hits him afterwards. I remember watching in a class that I had, and I was watching one of the students that was always being disciplined. And then I watched him closely, and he was reacting to another kid in the room who kept giving him the finger. And so that's what he was responding to. And so we need to watch those kinds of things closely. And I think that when we do get back to a regular education program, we are going to really work with students to create those positive behavior and positive interactions. Behavior is learned. Kids need to learn proper behavior. And so that's one of the things that we'll be working with and discussing. There will be open-ended discussions to bring some light and clarity to this topic. As always, your opinions on the episodes can be sent to me, Steve Nurse at graduate22@comcast.net. So the name for this series of episodes is going to be Online Learning During COVID-19. And we're going to call it Online Learning. Is it connected or disconnected? With that, during COVID-19, I hope you are all washing your hands, keeping a social distance away, and also not being in large crowds. Right now, the main thing that I'm trying to work is to keep a social distance from the refrigerator when I'm home all the time. So I think that just about all of us can say that this is the toughest year for students, teachers, and administrators, as well as parents. Let's break those down a little bit. Students may not have all the technology skills that they need. School districts, in many cases and in most cases, were not prepared to work with kids at home. Now, you can buy laptops, you can buy iPads, you can give those things to students at home. But you're also assuming that that student has to be connected to the internet. And one of my friends has three kids, and he works online at his house. So that means there are four of them that are working online. So you need to have a good internet system for that. I also say, and I can't speak for all professors or all teachers that are 50 plus, but I can tell you that younger people probably have a lot better technological skills than I do. So I think one of the issues is when you're working with students online, and I have taught college classes through distance ed and online, that if you don't do it right, you can spend a lot more time in trying to get your system up and running and not have the time to spend for academics or for lectures or to make sure that everybody is there. For parents, an entirely different requirement. Now, many parents have been laid off because of the pandemic, so there are parents in the home. But you also have lots of families where there are two parents that are working outside of the home. So what do you do with a second grader, a third grader, a fourth grader, or even a kindergarten student that's home alone, or that you need to arrange some kind of support system for that student? I think that's a big issue. Also, teachers may be at the age when they're more susceptible to COVID-19. We know that the effects of COVID-19 on small children, kids, elementary school kids, that the effects certainly can be serious. I'm not downplaying that at all. But we also know that many young kids can actually get COVID and be without any kind of symptoms, yet carry the virus. So I'm sure that's a big concern for many teachers. for administrators, it's just the sky is falling syndrome. What do you do? How do you deal with budgets? How do you deal with lower class sizes? How do you even arrange things like bus schedules? And kids that have been used to getting breakfast at school every day, and kids that have been used to getting a decent meal for lunch every day, how do you address those concerns? And they certainly are concerns. I think for students, again, different issues. For students, you've got the issue of sports. Many kids, their ticket into a college is through a sport and doesn't need to be football or basketball. It can be any number of things for both men and women transitioning into college. What do you do about SATs that you need to take? Can we take the, you know, before SATs have always been held in a very secure environment. If you did anything out of the ordinary in taking your SATs or even things like graduate record exams, it was listed as not taken under standard conditions. Even when I took my SATs, I was in a wheelchair, and all I needed was a small desk that I could write on because all the chairs in the hall were bolted into the floor. I took the very same test with the very same time, and I took it on a desk rather than on the regular chairs, and my test was marked taken under non-standard conditions. So those are also important issues. Also, I think that we need to really look in this issue of online education. What is a hybrid model? And I think we need to look at education as a whole. In the past, our education system really for many, many years has been, the industrial world that we get kids in school, we train them, we give them basic math skills, we give them basic English skills and writing skills. Even the old song, reading and writing and arithmetic taught to the tune of a hickory stick, doesn't really flow very well anymore. So we need to look at different models. Maybe some kids can do better online. Some kids need direct instruction in classrooms. Some kids need a combination of both of those environments, both of those methods of teaching. Regardless, it used to always be said that many parents used to tell me that during the junior high years or the adolescent years, they wish they could put their adolescent in animated suspension for 3 years because those were the toughest years. But really, it's important that kids learn socialization. It's important that boys need to learn how to be appropriate around girls, and vice versa. Girls need to be learning how to be appropriate around boys. We need to learn how to be problem solvers. What do we do if a child is coming home and misses a bus? What are your options? Who can you call? How can you solve that problem? So I think that critical thinking skills are really important. And I think that you can work with critical thinking skills online. You can also work in small groups. Most of the technological communication systems like Zoom, you can have three or four students break out into a side room and have a discussion. I think one of the toughest things that's going to be occur because of online education is simply classroom management and really making sure that there is some guidance for that. I'm also concerned about student teachers. I'm concerned that student teachers will be preparing themselves to work with kids online, and next year they're going to have 26 pairs of eyes staring at them and figuring out what's the easiest way to push buttons. That certainly happens. Other things we need to be aware of when we're talking about online education, and this is important, is how do we motivate teachers? How do we motivate teachers to teach effectively online? How do we get them excited about teaching? Almost every student teacher that I ever supervised was excited about becoming a teacher. They wanted to work with kids. They had the skills to work with kids. So how do we make that transition with student teachers that are being prepared right now? Many people will say, we've lost a year of education. I don't think we've lost a year of education. Kids can still learn things while they're at home. Kids can still learn how to socialize with family members. And so I think, and I mentioned, we'll mention it at some point, when we do talk about kids, they're not just in hibernation. They are active. They are thinking. They are working in their environment. And so let's not look at this year of COVID as a lost year. Let's look at it as an opportunity. And I think it's an opportunity to really find what our students, what our children are good at, what they like, what are their dislikes. And when we find out those kinds of things, I think we'll be much better prepared, and they will be much better prepared for the future. I would like to see kids, and we're really looking right now at kids that are in junior high school, and asking kids in junior high school, middle school, and high school, what do you want to do when you get out of school? How do you transition into a job? Not every kid has to go to college. I think there are as many schools that teach technical education, that teach small engine repair, that teach diesel repair, that teach refrigeration system repair, that teach electrical repair. Those are jobs that still require a great deal of reading manuals, a great deal of math. They're not just, we used to think, oh, he's not very smart, he's going to technical school. Not true at all. The ability to read and to analyze in a technical school is just as hard as it is in a four-year post-secondary education program. And years ago, I did some research on kids that were transitioning from school. And one of the things that I found out, one of my findings was that some of the kids that went into two-year programs, into a technical school, learned a trade that they were interested in, that they cared about, made more money, at least during the initial years, than kids that had gone to a four-year education program. There really are not a lot of four-year education programs that you can go into and immediately leave school and go right into a job. So those are important considerations. We're certainly, if we get into online education, we're certainly going to need to do more in the way of technological skills. We can teach hands-on, even if you take a program like YouTube. I was trying to figure out how to insert paper in my new printer. So I I punched the model number into YouTube, and immediately comes up with four or five different ways that showed me how to hands-on fix that that computer. And some programs are more hands-on, but I also think if we're a creative, we can teach programs like art. We can teach programs like shop. And I think those are really important skills to have. School has certainly changed since I was there, when girls were required to take a semester of sewing and a semester of cooking. And in my school, I was required to take a semester of wood shop and a semester of metal shop. And but those are skills that were important to me. And to be quite honest, I'd wish I'd had a semester of sewing. Probably would have helped me a lot. I think we also need to worry about, well, I would say worry about, that's probably not a good choice of words. But I think there are some groups of students that are going to be more affected by online education than others. I think that especially teachers who teach special ed programs, teachers who work with kids that are on individual education programs, are really going to need to collaborate and work closely with other teachers to provide students with that quality education that I'm talking about. So I do think there are positive things. I think that, again, this model has never occurred before. I mean, even in the last few years, I think we've had a few schools that were closed down maybe for a week or two or three days due to measles, but nothing like this. I hope that we don't panic. I think that's the key. I hope parents let their kids be kids. Kids are not going to work academically for 12 hours every day and do homework to try and catch up. And they shouldn't have to. Kids need to have time to be kids. We don't need to program kids all the time when they do come back. I also think we need to work with kids that English may be a second language. In this Seattle area, we have, and in Washington in general, Washington, Oregon, California, we have lots of students who are Hispanic. And we need to make sure that if the child is able to understand in a language that they're comfortable with. And we need to work with that in schools. I think it's really interesting also to note that we tend to look at a thing like online education and say that it's nothing but bad, that the kids are going to lose the education. But I really don't think that's true. I think we also need to really think about how we will get, if now that school has taken it on as a responsibility to provide kids with school lunch and to provide kids with breakfast, how do we do that in the future? Families are counting on these kinds of things. I was in a school this summer in Tacoma, and in the cafeteria, volunteers and people were preparing lunches and breakfasts that could be taken out in a sack type lunch for those persons. I think also with kids that have English as a second language, the socialization is important. The learning of specific concepts, learning English language, is also going to be important. When we really look at these things, it's important that when we do bring kids back to school, that education is not looked at as a punishment. that when my granddaughter works online at home with her dad, he doesn't say, "All right, Juniper, now it's time you have to go to school." That should be a pleasurable experience. We also need to take breaks. It's important. We have recess in school for a reason. Several years ago, some of the schools in Washington were so obsessed with giving kids standardized tests to find out which district was ahead of the other district that we said, we're going to cut recess and have kids stay in from recess and work. And I said to, many times over to school administrators, this is the worst thing you could possibly do. They need, and boys and girls need time to go outside, get some fresh air. Now you can socialize 6 feet apart easily on a school ground and run around and then come back into the classroom, be ready to work. Even if you're at home, go out in the backyard, run around the house three times, play with the dog, do anything, but make sure that your kids are also getting those breaks. And that's critically important that we know that when these children are being educated, they're also, it's very holistic approach, that they are doing some exercise, that they are doing some work outside in the yard. If I had my hope for next year, I would hope that we would take the whole month of September. We would take the whole month of September and have that as a welcoming activity, have that as a time for kids to get back to know each other. I would certainly spend lots of time on socialization and behavior. And when those things are learned, then we can start getting back into educational academic programs. We could start getting back into programs like plays and sports and all those other activities that are done from groups. We have not lost a year. We have not lost a year. And we need to take advantage of every minute that we're on this planet. It doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be a productive minute. I actually think that I'm sometimes very productive when I've taken a nap for 15 minutes. I'm sure that I'm much more brilliant after I come out of that nap. So I think that what I'd like to leave you with on this first episode of this series on online education, listen with an open mind, an open heart, and open ears. And let's look at the positives. We can also look at the negatives and figure out how we can turn the negatives into positives. With that, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse. The program you're listening to is Abled, the program of possibilities. Have a great day.